Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Friday, November the 8th. Hard to believe the year has flown by so quickly and 3 days after the election as well. Today we're going to be chatting with our good friend Frank Burke up in Wisconsin. Of course, he's a businessman. He's an author. Great friend of our show. So let me turn on his microphone here and say hello to our good friend Frank. Frank, how is the weather up in Wisconsin?
The weather is absolutely beautiful and totally atypical for where we are. It's right now 57 degrees at on the 8th of November. That's phenomenal.
Yes, well, we have a little bit of rain down here. Nothing serious or heavy, just more like a drizzle coming
sure.
down at the moment. But Frank, I guess I should tell the audience that this is going to be the first of your two appearances this month, because we always do a Thanksgiving show later in the month. So please start planning for that.
Definitely. I'm honored. Thank you very much, Silvio.
Yes, well, you know, you always read something to us, which is always really good. So I'm looking forward to it. You don't have to tell me now. Make it a surprise. And just keep it a surprise. I always like your surprises.
Well,
so.
Great. Definitely.
Well, we're going to talk about the 2024 election and your reaction to it, and also what happened up in Wisconsin, President Trump winning the state, but unfortunately we were not able to win the Senate election. But let me begin with just a memory, Frank. It was on this day in 1960 that John Kennedy defeated Richard Nixon, and you know what turned out to be a very controversial election. And, you know, you were in New York, I assume, at the time. What was your memory of it? I mean, what do you recall of it?
Well, you know, my parents were Democrats, and the one of the big things about Kennedy was the fact that he was a Catholic, nominally. And, it was like they remembered the 1928 election when Al Smith, who was also a Catholic, ran against Herbert Hoover. And at that time, there was tremendous bigotry. The Ku Klux Klan paraded a columnist named Westbrook Pegler, stated that if Smith was elected, there would be a tunnel dug to the Vatican, which would be a fantastic engineering feat. But there were people in those days who believed that. And it was just considered such a tremendous sign of progress that a man who professed to be a Catholic, even if he didn't quite act like it at times, was elected as president.
Right. No, I mean, that must have been something. It was actually a very exciting election as well. I mean, it was the first, as I understand, the first time that the election was covered on TV as much as it was. Of course, the last time in 56, there was no drama to that election. Eisenhower was reelected in huge numbers. So most people knew by 9 o'clock that Eisenhower would be reelected. Here it went into the night and into the morning and into the wee hours of the morning, and I guess it wasn't until almost the next day that President Nixon, I believe, conceded, or at least I don't know if he actually came out and conceded, but whatever. It took a while for that particular election. But, you know, we were down in Cuba when that happened, and I always remember my father talking about that election. That turned out to be a significant election for people like me, because what happened with the Bay of Pigs and all of that shortly after, that, you know, ended up changing our destiny a little bit, Frank. But so that election, from a family standpoint, was consequential for me and lots of Cubans who ended up growing up in the United States, Frank.
Yeah, I can believe it was. And, of course, the thing that never came out at that time, there was so much that didn't come out about Kennedy and about that election and the involvement of Sam Giancana and organized crime in Illinois, in Chicago. And, you know, it was kind of, among a lot of Democrats, it was kind of, ha-ha, you know, ballot boxes floating in the Chicago River, this kind of thing. But in retrospect, it may well have had an awful lot to do with the assassination.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's I've heard that as well. It did clearly, I mean, it had an impact on the country, to say the least, because I think had Nixon won, I believe a couple of things would have been different. But I will tell you, Frank, I've listened to the Kennedy-Nixon debates. I mean, they were really, in many ways, very classy. I mean, just absolutely classy debates, especially the media. Very classy people. And the one thing that, when you watch those debates, as I did a couple of times, I had a school project where we had to watch them, and it was just absolutely amazing. But when you watch those debates and you realize, Frank, that the biggest issue of the 1960s that eventually brought down Lyndon Johnson, Vietnam, was not even mentioned in that election.
Right. Well, that's true.
I mean, if anybody had said to you, or during that debate, you know, guys, 4 years from now or 5 years from now, we're going to have 500,000 men fighting in Vietnam, you know, I don't know that anybody would have believed you. I mean, so I'm just saying the biggest issue of the 1960s never came up, and that was Vietnam, Frank.
Yes, and I think, you know, one thing that was very interesting about that is that people who saw the debates on TV gave an edge to Kennedy, not a great edge, but a slight edge. People who heard it on the radio felt it was an absolute even draw.
Interesting. Yeah, I have heard that also. I've heard that also, and I can understand why, because Nixon was a very thoughtful man. And I also think, Frank, help me out here. This is a guess of mine. Maybe you agree with me or this or not, but I think Nixon had a tone of voice and an accent that was probably easier to follow on the radio. Kennedy's New England accent probably was not as clear on the radio. Do you think that had anything to do with it?
I think it may well have. It may well have. Because in those days, you know, people, as you mentioned, the media was a lot more classy. And people were a lot more careful about the way they spoke, accent, pronunciation, things like that. And, you know, somebody who had a strange accent or an unfamiliar accent would be, you know, maybe a little suspect in some areas. I remember there was a great deal of debate as to whether Kennedy spoke with a Boston accent or what they called a Harvard accent. Now, I don't know what the difference is, but I can remember that being a case.
Well, no, I mean, it was fascinating because I have actually watched the video, and a high school friend of mine had the debate on a vinyl LP, you know, like a record player, or a record, I mean, what we used to call an LP, vinyl LP. And if you listen to the audio, it is different than watching. I mean, it's the same people, of course, the same content, but on the audio side, you know, I can see why people would favor Nixon. And Nixon had a very clear voice and a very good voice, and a very clear way of speaking. Whereas Kennedy, I mean, there were times when you weren't sure what he was talking about, when he would say stuff like Cuba.
Yes,
well,
exactly.
Nixon would say Cuba. And I think most people probably understood where Cuba was, but not necessarily Cuber. So,
right.
You know, I'm just, because I picked that up listening to it, just that accent. But anyway, it was 64 years ago today, that would be 64 years ago today.
Wow.
that it happened, 1960. So I just wanted to mention, to bring it up, because Do you recall one more thing about the debate? I mean, not the debate, but the election. Do you recall it in your family, the TV was on when the counting was going on and the coverage?
Absolutely. And
because I think that was the first time that happened.
Yeah. No, it was, I can remember there was just tremendous excitement about it, and the fact that it just was not known until the next day.
Yeah, and I wonder, when was the last time that an election was that contested? I mean, I maybe the Truman-Dewey election was,
well,
I know
I,
that
I
was, but that was, there was no television at that moment.
Without a doubt, Bush-Gore was worse than that.
right, but Bush-Gore, you know, was with all the technology in the world. I'm just saying, Truman Dewey was just radio, and of course the print press. But anyway, I just wanted to pick your brain on that and see what memories you had of that very interesting election. Well, let's come to 2024. We have another election, and what were you feeling before the election, and what were you feeling, let's say, after the results? Were you feeling kind of cautiously optimistic before and then very happy after? What was your process? What were you thinking, Frank?
Well, initially, I think as the time went on, I felt more and more, Peggy and I, my wife, cautiously optimistic, because having come from a business background in market research, you understand the importance of a strategic late trending. And it became clear that even though the polls were telling us, and I was very skeptical of the polls, we can get into that, but they were telling us that they were neck and neck. By the same token, you could see that Trump was beginning to build. He was beginning to trend. And when you trend at the right time, you're unstoppable. For Harris, it didn't really trend, but it started. Her peak was very early on, because people were so relieved that it wasn't going to be Biden that they actually forgave what I think and always will think was a totally illegal coup in making her the nominee and disregarding the primaries. Or the polls, rather, you know, that people had Biden. The Democrats had voted for Biden. So I think what they should have to have a primary, but it could have been quickly put together. But if that had happened, I don't think it would have been Kamala Harris.
Well, that is a very good point, because I agree with you 100%. I think that if, let's say, middle of July, the Democrats say, we're going to have, you know, anybody who wants to run, you know, we'll have we'll do a quick poll, and whoever, let's say the top three or whatever, top four, and then we'll have debates. They had plenty of time to do debates. They could have had, you know, debates for a couple of weeks and have all four on the stage answering questions. I think you're right. I don't think she would have been able to survive that. I think more than likely in that scenario, the governor of PA, the governor of Pennsylvania, or the governor of California would have won those debates and would have been the nominee. I don't think she would have made it, because if we learned anything during the campaign, Frank, is how bad she is at being a candidate. I've never seen you. Maybe you agree with me, but, you know, look, I've seen all of these candidates from Lyndon Johnson and Barry Goldwater when we got here. We got here that year, 64. So I remember Goldwater, I remember Nixon, I mean, I remember, you know, obviously Carter and Ford and Reagan and Bush and Clinton and Bush again. All of these men I remember on TV and what how they performed. She was so bad compared to any of them. Take the weakest of those candidates, let's say Dukakis, and she was even worse than him, Frank.
Well, yes, but, you know, I will always think, and I think, you know, you could see it in the end. I think she was Biden's revenge because Biden was not happy at being pushed out, and he was the one who in the end pushed her, I think, knowing how bad she would be as a candidate. He was willing to sacrifice the election to show them, okay, you don't want to play fair with me? I'm going to really give it to you. And here she is.
Right. No, I think there's something to that. And to confirm what you just said, the First Lady on Election Day is wearing a red pantsuit.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm sitting there saying, if you're the wife of a Democrat on Election Day, why will you wear a red pantsuit?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
no,
people say, well, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence. You know what? Women don't dress by coincidence.
Very astute comment. Very true.
Well,
very
maybe
true.
Peggy will disagree, but I think women will actually, on a special occasion, I mean, what could be bigger than the election day for, you know, a legacy of your husband, and you come out to vote on a wearing a red pantsuit? I don't
mm-hmm.
know. I'd be suspicious. I think Kamala Harris had to know at that moment that they were out for her.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
Frank, before we move to the Wisconsin vote, what do you think, just, you know, what were some of the points or some of the reasons that people voted? I mean, just like, I don't know, two or three things that come to your mind about why people voted in such big ways against, I mean, this was a rejection of the Biden
yeah.
administration. So why do you think they voted that way? Or some of the issues,
well,
I guess, that made people vote that way.
I think one of the main things, and I don't know that a lot of people would have been able to articulate it, but I think that they felt it. I think it was the fact that it became very obvious at that debate what had been known. If you were a political watcher, as you and I are, and many people aren't, many people don't watch the news or they pick up tidbits from social media or whatever. But if you were watching, you knew that Joe Biden was quickly failing cognitively and that he was in no shape and is not in any shape to govern this country, to be the most powerful leader in the free world. And the fact, okay, so let's take that. That is a given. And they had to admit it themselves when they threw him under the bus, as the saying goes, and disregarded the legalities, the primary, the whole procedure. So, What does that mean? And this is the great takeaway. It means that our country is being governed by people we have not elected. We don't even know who they are. I think their string puppet, their spokesman at this time is Barack Obama. I think he holds the power. I think he is being manipulated by the George Soros, by Big Pharma, by a lot of business people, a lot of businesses, and by foreign powers. And by foreign powers. Because certainly, in his term, Obama's attempts to pacify Iran and give them literally, you know, pallets full of physical American dollars, trying to get into all kinds of pacts with them, not to mention the so-called climate accords, which put American manufacturing and the American people at a big disadvantage while giving an advantage to China, India, and other countries and countries in Africa that were undeveloped or
yes,
less developed.
You're exactly right about that. The other thing that really bothers me about that climate change, or not climate change, the Paris, whatever they call them, the Paris, whatever, the Paris deal,
oh,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, the Paris Accords, is that they were never approved by the Senate. So they were never the law of the land. I mean, anytime, as you know, that a president makes a deal of that nature, it has to be approved by the Senate so that it formally becomes, you know, a treaty. So he actually signed on to all of this and was implementing it completely in an unconstitutional manner. And so much of the Obama administration was that way. And unfortunately, it caught up with the Democrats in the Biden administration, because he started doing the same thing, you know, with the student loans and, you know, all kinds of things that where they were going, or, I mean, using the executive order basically to do what they couldn't get Congress to do. But how one thing before we break, how big of a deal, I'm in Texas, you're in Wisconsin, how big of a deal up there was the immigration issue?
It was a very big deal. It was a very big deal because there's one of the oldest towns in Wisconsin. It actually has a French name, Prairie du Chien. It's on the Mississippi River. And the fur trade used to go on the Wisconsin River. I'm going back to the 1600s. I don't remember it, but they told me that. It went from Green Bay to Prairie du Chien on the Mississippi, where and that was the route. Okay, so it's a very pretty little small town. They have had an infestation of the Venezuelan Tren de Agua, whatever you call it, gang down there. We've had terrible things, you know, going on in some of the cities with crime. We have a crime problem. I mean, my God, look at Milwaukee. Milwaukee is in terrible shape. And the reason is because, to a great extent, of immigration. And the fact that literally, you know, it's not just people slamming their way across the border. There are people, a lot of the Venezuelans have been flown into this country by the Biden administration.
Right. That's right. And then to top it off, Frank, there are something like 200,000 kids missing. You know, these literally kids who are missing from, we don't know where they are. We don't know where 200,000 kids, I think maybe it's even more than that. 200,000 kids, we have no idea where they are. So these kids could be dead. They could be dead. They could be slaves. They could be sexual slaves if they're young women. I mean, all kinds of horrible things, so horrible consequences out of this. But I think the way I look at it is that every city, every state became a border state in the sense that they were all basically being inundated or attacked or invaded by these gangs. Frank, let me take a little break, and then when we come back, I'd like to hear your thoughts about what happened in Wisconsin. Okay, so let me take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend Frank Burke right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Frank Burke. We're looking at the elections of 2024. Frank, one thing that I wanted to bring up here before I forget, before we talk about Wisconsin, one thing that I wanted to mention, and I don't know if you heard this, the Kamala Harris campaign had raised about $1 billion to win this election, and they ended up with a $20 million
deficit. How do you spend $1 billion in a campaign and lose? I mean, that's got to be even more embarrassing than anything else, Frank.
Well, I think it is. But the thing is, I think the question remains, was it spent on the campaign? Or were you looking at people dipping into the till? Were you looking at people being bought? Were you looking at all kinds of bribery? You know, let's not forget, because we can't forget, let's not forget the corruption of the Biden administration on the whole and the corruption that's attendant on a great many Democratic politicians. Now, granted, we have corruption on the Republican side, too. But the Democrats seem to have made it a fine art. And when you
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Frank. I'm sorry.
Well, when you look at that kind of deficit, it's kind of like what happened to, I forget the ridiculous amount that it was, that was in New York, that de Blasio, when he was mayor, entrusted to his wife for some social program. The programs never happened and the money's gone. Now, you know,
yeah, I have a feeling that that money went to buy some purses and maybe some hats.
Yeah, and some travel. I want to bring one more thing up. I'll go back to one more thing quickly, Silvio.
Yes,
and
please.
That is, you mentioned children, the 200,000 to 300,000 children that are missing. If you remember back in the last Trump campaign, when he lost to Biden, the squad members and everyone were saying, he's locking up kids at the border. He's putting them in cages. And what was really happening there was that the kids who arrived without their parents, without guardians, were being sequestered in defined areas until such time as the people who wanted to take them could prove their identity and prove their relationship to them. Whereas under Biden, you just had to show up and say, oh, that kid is mine. That kid's my niece. She's got to come with me. And that's what happened.
That's absolutely what happened, because I don't see how you can lose 200,000 kids. You know, I can understand a few, but I think a lot of those kids were brought up here, and it's a terrible humanitarian crisis. I fear, Frank, that some of those young women are in prostitution, and who knows how they're being treated. I mean, it's just absolutely.
Well, there's no doubt about it, because I can tell you that in Queens, New York, there's an area called Roosevelt Avenue, and it's in an area that was essentially, more recently, heavily Haitian. And I know a good friend of mine whom I grew up with was the pastor of a church down there. And I said to him on one occasion, John, he's a Monsignor, John, what is the biggest problem you have? He responded, voodoo. Well, that whole area in Queens, New York, has been called now the Sweetheart's Market, because it's all these young women who have been forced into prostitution who are there. It's that, and it's people selling stolen goods.
Wow. No, I mean, yeah. New York is a mess. New York is a mess. Now, I don't know if you heard that the mayor of New York stopped this subsidy or these allowances that they were giving people to buy food. He stopped it yesterday. And I think, frankly... Did you hear about that?
No, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, you know how New York had been handing out like some debit cards that people, some of these migrants could use to buy food? Sort of like, I guess, kind of like food stamps, except that they were, you know, cards or Visa cards or whatever. And they could use them to buy food. That program was pretty expensive for the city, and they've terminated that program, I guess, as of, I don't know when it'll terminate, but it either terminated at the end of this week or the beginning of next week. So that that means that many of those people are going to have to figure out some other way to eat. And that may very well be through more crime or criminal activity. So that's a pretty scary situation there. Well, tell me about Wisconsin, Frank.
Well, you know, there's something that has – it was current in Wisconsin, but I don't think it made much of the national news. And that is the fact that on Election Day, Republican poll workers entering the polling places, I believe in Milwaukee and I think in Madison, for a period of time until the poll – poll watchers – until they were able to contact the elections board and they were able to get them in. But there was a time lapse there. Secondly, it was discovered that in Milwaukee, a number of the voting machines, the counting machines, the tabulating machines, had been sealed. There were seals on them, but they hadn't been turned on. The key had not turned them on so they could do the job they were supposed to do. Now, at this point, I don't think they had to rerun something like 30,000 ballots, which they said they reran. But the loss between Hovde and Baldwin, difference was just somewhere around 29,000 ballots. And it would not surprise me, I can't say for sure, but it's close enough. I don't know whether he will demand a recount, but it's suspicious because that's the kind of thing that is going on in Wisconsin.
Right. No, I agree. And in Michigan, it was very close too. Now, in both Michigan and in Wisconsin, you have third parties, basically libertarians.
Yeah.
And, well, there are other parties, but the libertarian is in you know, one of the parties. And it's just, you know, these libertarians are going to end up electing Democrats because the difference in the vote is roughly the votes that they got. So, I mean, I've met a lot of libertarians. I mean, there were quite a few down here over the years. And, you know, fine. I mean, they're good people. They believe in doing everything 100% based on the Constitution, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But I also tell them, look, you know, it's great that you feel this way, but if you elect a Democrat, you're actually electing somebody who's a lot further from you than a Republican. And I think that's the case in Wisconsin. I mean, if you're a libertarian and you believe in small government, well, you're not going to get any with this lady Baldwin.
Absolutely, absolutely. She's, you know, been a constant supporter of Biden. She's voted like 96% of the time, something like that, with him. On top of that, her big claim to fame was that she was the first openly gay woman to sit in the United States Senate, but in the ads, with her girlfriend in New York. And the girlfriend is a big-time investment advisor. So she's not paying attention. I'm surprised Hovde didn't bring it up, but she was involved in a very serious scandal some years ago with the VA hospital in Toma, Wisconsin. And it had to do with the fact that there were incompetent staff in the working in the hospital. And on top of that, you know, drugs were being given out that should not have been given out. And it was a mess. And it took a long time to straighten it out. And that was her responsibility. So I just don't know why anyone would vote for her or want anything to do with her.
Yeah, I mean, especially a libertarian who had to know somewhere along the line that, I mean, it's great to, you know, it's great to see your name in the paper getting votes, but the Libertarian Party, I don't know if in Wisconsin it was that strong. Clearly in other places it is. And they usually end up getting 1%, 1.5% of the vote. But in a close election, that usually helps,
usually helps the Democrat. Now, Trump did win the state. I was happy to see that.
Yeah.
And some people were asking the question, how can Trump win the state by 30,000 and she loses or she wins? Or, I mean, Eric Holtby loses by whatever it is. So, either there was some split ticket there, people voting for Trump and voting for Baldwin. That's the only explanation. But it doesn't make any sense to me, Frank. Why would anybody vote for Trump and then Senator Baldwin?
No,
I mean,
I would agree with you.
That doesn't make any sense.
No. And, the one thing that has, when they've said to people, well, what do you attribute this big wave to? And the answer has always come back, people want change. And she has been there for 25 years. And, if anybody needed to be changed over,
hey, right,
it was that seat.
Right. And the sad part here is that there was a first-class Republican candidate. I mean, this is one of the best candidates I've ever seen. And he was just first class all the way. I mean, first class all the way. Frank, last question of the day. You have a great mind for solving things with your business background. But can you tell me, just out of curiosity, Joe Biden got 81 million votes in 2020, and Kamala Harris got 65. Trump got roughly the same amount. What happened to those people, 16 million people? Did they die? Did they decide to stay home? What's your gut feeling?
My feeling is this, that if you noticed, and it actually went in some cases, like in Virginia, to the Supreme Court, there was so much anger about the last election and about what happened with Biden that a large number of states began to purge their voter rolls and take off the people who were dead, the people who could not vote legally that were on the voter rolls, the false names, the multiple people at the same address, etc. So I don't know how much that accounted for, but I have to believe that that was at least a part of it, that the states said, look, we've had it with bad elections, and we're going to purge the voter rolls and get rid of the people who on them who shouldn't be on them.
Right. Well, we had a cleanup of the voter rolls down here in Texas last year, and they found out that a lot of letters were sent to people who were actually living in the cemetery. That somehow, they were registered. And I don't know exactly how that happens, okay? Because, for example, when my father passed away, we never deleted him from the voter rolls. So for all I know, he may still be in the voter rolls. But I do know when you have to notify Social Security of his passing, maybe they take care of that. I don't know. I don't know if it works that way or however it works. But when our father passed away, and that's almost, it's going to be 9 years in December. Isn't that amazing? 9 years. But I never went down to the voters registrar and said, my father passed away, please delete him from the rolls. So some of it could be, intentional. Some of it could just be, like in my case, I never did it. My mother, too. When my mother passed away, I don't think she was ever actually deleted from the voter rolls. But lots of people, we found a bunch of people here in Texas who had passed away who were still registered to vote. So, it happens, I guess, everywhere. Well, one last question, Frank. Is Eric Holtby going to contest the election, or has he conceded yet?
Well, I don't know. I hadn't heard that he conceded. But, of course, we've been up at the farm. In fact, I'm driving the car now, because when we're at the farm, which is in western Wisconsin, there is no cellular service that we can use. So I have to go into town. I have to go elsewhere. So the last 2 days, I've been kind of out of communication with the outside world. So I can't tell you yet, but I will. I'll get you the news when I know. The one thing I want to say,
I have not seen it, Frank, and I think I would have seen it if he had conceded. I think I would have seen it because I've been following that election closely. So I think if he had said, I accept the results and congratulations to Senator Baldwin, I think that would have been in the news. I would have seen that, Frank. So I don't think he has yet.
Probably hasn't. And, you know, I will say one thing, and that is the fact that as Peg and myself felt when Trump won, a tremendous sense of relief, a tremendous burden lifted. And I've seen that among a lot of people. I was in the market today, the supermarket, and I overheard two men. Obviously, you know, this is rural America, real rural. Blue-collar workers saying, you know, well, doggone it, I didn't go to college, and I've been working all my life. Why should I have to pay for somebody who wanted to become a lawyer? And this is what Biden wants. I'm glad he lost. But I see people, believe it or not, one of the great signs, as we were driving over here, and we live full-time pretty much on the east side of the state, so it's a 3-hour and 15-minute trip, large number of people putting up Christmas decorations already. It's kind of like there's a sense of, okay, this is behind us. Let's celebrate. Let's get into the holidays now, because we've been through a bad time, and it's not over yet. But this
I agree with you. I feel very relieved because I think of all the possible things that could have gone wrong with a continuation of the Biden policies in so many ways. So I feel much better than he won. Frank, thank you so much for your time as always. And we'll speak or connect in the next week or so to plan something for Thanksgiving, okay?
Well, thank you. I'm honored. And, you know, thanks so much. God bless you, the audience, and the United States of America.
That I feel exactly the same way, Frank. Have a wonderful day. And give my best to Wisconsin.
I certainly will.
Say hello to all those trees out there, all those cows out there, you know, that I remember.
Yes, definitely.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend, Frank Burke, great friend of our show, and always interesting to hear what he has to say about these elections that just concluded. Everybody have a wonderful weekend. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. We'll talk to you later.